Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
I don't know who I am anymore.
Well,
you've been given a second chance. You can do things different this time. So why don't you do something completely new? And have some
ball to open.
Ball to open.
Yes, and what do you do?
Grandmaster of the knowledge.
What?
No, he means it like a metaphor, like two minds.
Everywhere we go, there you are.
This lot are on my side.
But we've got things very, very wrong.
Hello, and welcome to Pull to Open, an ongoing quest to watch all of Doctor Who, the whole thing, all of it, all more the episodes that we have now. In random order, I'm Pete Paschal.
And I'm Chris Taylor, and I'm coming to you here from the black blue yonder. I'm coming to you from Costa Rica, as I have been for the last 3 weeks. And I have just watched The Star Beast.
Wow, look at you.
Yes.
I watched it a few hours ago.
The internet held. I just watched it. I watched it with someone who's not into Doctor Who, so I don't just have my quick take, my extremely fanish, excited reaction. I also have some thoughts to share from someone who may or may not be interested in watching the next episode. So stay tuned for that.
Not to blow you away or anything, but I'm actually not even in my home base. Astute viewers on YouTube will notice neither of us are at our home base. I'm actually visiting my family in Pittsburgh, and I've got the extended family. I've got the grandparents' takes on this. Who next?
Exotic Pittsburgh.
I've only watched maybe one other episode of Doctor Who with us. So we got takes, folks. We got our takes. We got hot takes. We got all the takes.
Yeah, we've got more takes than any other hot take that you're going to look at on Spotify or any of the other services. Stop looking now. This is the hot take on the Star Beast that you want to hear, because I'm about to ask Pete the question I've been dying to ask him, because we haven't talked about this off the pod. We've literally both just watched this. Pete, what did you think?
Chris, I liked it. It's new Doctor Who.
Isn't it a Viking banger? Yes, no. We'll get that.
We'll get to the ratings.
Ratings. Hey. Yes, but you liked it as an adaptation of the Star Beast, as a way to bring Doctor Who back, and as a way to show how much money Disney can give you to spend.
Holy cow.
Wow.
You're not kidding. That meep. Yeah. That is the best looking meep that has ever meeped. That was an impressive meep.
I mean, that was so self-referential in so many ways. And one of the wonderful things is the fact that any previous in the previous eras of Doctor Who monsters that were not, shall we say, well-funded, the eyeballs would absolutely not have blinked on the meep.
Right. Yeah.
So the fact that that's the thing that Donna reacts to. But yeah, let's just go big picture. Is this how you expected they play the Dr. Donna thing?
Yeah, pretty much. I think the notes of it, which is to say we have to sort of pick up where we left off, we have to bring people up to speed, all of that sort of played out how I thought. The one thing that I sort of think, well, there's a few things that to dissect didn't work as well. So I like that he's like, well, technically I said if she remembers me, not if, you know, she sees me. And that's a little bit like, okay, they're really playing that up here for sake of the story, because it seemed like before the last time we saw them in End of Time that if she saw enough of him and enough, you know, fantastic stuff, that the memories would just come flooding back. And that seems to not be the case. It seems like now she's the Winter Soldier and he has to give her like the code words to really get at the memories, which is like, oh, was that really the case the whole time? And if that was the whole time, you know, why put Wilf and Sylvia through that in terms of like trying to protect her from all the stuff? So that was a little unexpected. I think it works pretty well for the story. Don't get me wrong. I like that she's kind of in the dark Donna for most of it. Yes. But it is kind of cheating if you're really going to be honest. You know,
you mentioned Wilf, which is I got to say my initial emotional response to this is three tear emojis. I started weeping three times during the Starbeast. The first one was the mention that Wilf is alive. He's alive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so we're going to see him. We knew we were going to see him.
Yeah.
We knew that.
It was kind of an open secret, but they're saving it for presumably for the giggle.
Yeah, presumably.
Yeah.
Because Wildly Yonder apparently it occurs in some other entirely different location.
Yes.
So one thing, like I say, we already talked a little bit about the Meep, but we you know, the Meep looks amazing. Like, this is such a good looking Meep, but it's like what we hadn't seen until now was evil Meep. Mm-hmm. And I think they really nailed it. Like, in other words, like the eyes in the comic strip kind of change a little too much. I mean, you can get away with that in the comic. And I like how here they just kind of like angle it differently and show the Meep's teeth. And the moment they had to really get right was when the Meep whips out the gun. And I thought that was really good. Like, it was just like, ah, to hell with this or whatever. And he just pulls out the gun and just zaps the Roth. And we know how to pronounce it. It's the Roth Warriors.
Yes,
it's just like your IRA. It's a Roth. So, not a Roth.
I have to interrupt you there and point out you did not use the Meep's correct pronoun, which is the.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Well, I mean, we'll talk about the pronouns in a minute.
Okay. I mean, well, I'll just say, just on the, you know, all of the, you know, obviously there's a lot to talk about in the representation side of things.
And
I'll just
limit
it to one. I've got one comment for now. Chris Chibnall, I hope you're watching. That's how you do it.
Really? That's your comment?
That's my comment. That's my comment. We'll get to the details of why, but I feel like that was a masterclass in how you take things like talking about, you know, disability, talking about, you know, trans rights, and you make it, you do exactly what RTD is so good at doing. But we don't have to get into that now. We can talk about all the fanish stuff first.
Well, I want to kind of get it out of the way.
Okay, let's get it out of the way.
You might have noticed I said I liked it at the beginning. I didn't love it. And it's primarily because I have to push back on what you said, which is that I don't think this is how you do it. I think this was done in kind of an over-the-top, clumsy way. Like, it clearly, like, you know, like, I don't want to get too far down the, like, oh, is RTD going to be more progressive or woke or whatever than Chibnall. I mean, I think the evidence here is kind of yes, but it is one-off, right? Like, I feel like this might not be this thing we get all the time, but I do feel like they made sort of the identity stuff, having that sort of be the way they resolve it. It seems like they say at the end, oh, the reason they were able to win was because she's non-binary. Which is kind of weird, because I think that's like a strange message. Like, it'd be just as strange to me if they said, you know, if they flipped the script, well, we won because she's hetero. It's like, well, wait a minute. Neither one of those is actually a good message in my view. I mean, I might be in the minority,
well,
but
it's like, I think you can pick and choose here. I think you can say either they win because Donna had a kid, and leave it at this. You know, if that's your chosen headcanon, you can leave it there. The non-binary thing, I think, is RTD not overplaying his hand for one reason, and that's because it echoes, you know, it feels like it was almost intentional in 2009 to have, you know, Donna go binary, 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 binary.
Right.
That it feels like a payoff, and RTD is good at that, making things feel like payoffs years later, when obviously he didn't have this sort of thing in mind.
Yeah, she seemed like she was just stuttering back then, you know. Yeah. She was just stopping. Yeah.
Stuttering on a single word, but it's nice because it's, you know, takes us, ties it back to that thing. Doesn't feel like it's forced. It doesn't feel like it's out of nowhere to me because of that. Because, you know, I think you've got to be very careful in those moments about how you play this. But I got to say, you know, as someone who generally supports trans rights and hates what J.K. Rowling has done to the British, you know, the British children's entertainment scene with her, you know, take on trans issues, this felt like Russell T. Davies extending a big middle finger to J.K. Rowling and saying,
"Well, yeah, but I mean, I lost you." I think it might be me, so let me see what I can do. How are you doing? There you go. Now I heard you there for a second.
You did?
Now I can hear you. You're good. We'll just do some editing. Yeah, and I, you know, he's totally entitled to extend big middle fingers to very popular people, but I'm just saying, like, you don't have to necessarily polarize the audience and make it overtly political, which is kind of what you're saying. He just made this a really big political statement, which is, you know, like I say, Chibnall was fine with that. He can do that. But I think in both cases, this isn't how you do it. This you could have been more subtle about it and still have that progressive message. I just didn't need to be hit over the head with it. That's kind of what I'm saying. Otherwise, it was a great Doctor Who story. Tenet, like the smart stuff that this thing does is that it gives a lot of scenes with Tenet and Tate, which of course is what you want to do. Like he just gives them lots and lots of room to just banter off each other. You know, all the stuff where Sylvia's punching him out, you know, and even the dad, the new guy, her husband, he gets some really memorable scenes. I think all of that really, really worked well.
Yeah, you really get to know the family. This is really RTD doubling down on his soap opera skills, right? I think this was sort of mad soap opera skills in terms of just, giving us the personality of everyone in the family. And, you know, Sylvia has more to do than she's ever had before in terms of being the one who takes it upon herself to protect Donna, which is wonderful because, like Donna has just said, you know, she's kind of been fishing for the compliment from her mother, right? Whereas all the time, what her mother is really trying to keep her safe. She just doesn't. She's not demonstrative, right? So that was lovely. I think making Rose trans works as well because it gives Donna something to defend her daughter for. You know, which is really, you know, that's why I think it didn't sort of feel like political to me. Like it was just a soap. It's just a family.
I'm fine with the character being trans and all that, all the stuff. Like, don't get me wrong on this. Like I feel like including a trans character and being referential to that, I think is okay. But sort of having it sort of be this thing that he seemed to shoehorn into the climax to make the climax and the resolution about identity in some way, just felt a little off, felt wrong to me, and it felt unnecessarily polarizing. I already liked that she had a kid and therefore the meta crisis was postponed, essentially. Like they could get more time out of it. That really worked for me. That's a very Doctor Who way of doing it. I will say I did not, I'm curious what you thought of essentially the letting it go, that all they had to do was simply let go of the stuff.
I was going to say, that's where it got too far for me. That's where it went a bit too RTD-ish. That's where the friend who was watching it kind of laughed out loud at that because it was just, you know, I mean, it's pretty, it's fireworks, but it is kind of ridiculous and it is a bit too far. And
it's a total hand wave.
Welcome back to the treacly RTD era where you just, you know, stuff comes out of people's eyes and faces, and there's a choir. Right? You know, yep. We're back to that era of Doctor Who, and it's a welcome return, but also this is what we've got to expect.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So what do we think of the Roth, the unit, like all the other stuff we saw? I forget the name of the other scientific advisor woman.
Scientific advisor number 56.
Yeah. It seems like they're painting, this is RTD starting to fill in the canvas of his new Doctor Who, right? So he's clearly wants UNIT to be pretty prominent. I think UNIT is very much like his Doctor Who, and he's sort of stepping toward the whole thing with the Avengers Tower and Kate Lethbridge-Stewart mm-hmm. and stuff. So that's good.
It felt a bit artificial keeping Kate out of this one, to be honest. Like, why wouldn't she be there? It seemed like a bit forced to deliberately keep the big guns off screen.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's true. I think you kind of, you have to tease some things and have them come a little later. I mean, I think the new scientific advisor isn't bad. I just didn't think she was that memorable. I mean, yes, she's in a wheelchair, and you could, again, argue the whole, like, are we being a little too far with the representation?
I'll tell you one thing. I'm having our chair.
You're what?
I'm having a chair, to quote Peter Capaldi in The Magician's
Quest. Oh, there you go.
it's a pretty badass chair.
It's definitely, like, given what we were just saying the other week about the Davros thing, mm-hmm. It's like, okay, fair enough. This is the other side of the coin.
Yeah. I gotta feel like RTD set that one up by sort of getting us all riled up about the Davros thing by not the actual Children in Need short, but what he said about it. And by the way, listeners, if you're looking on Spotify or YouTube or whatever for that episode, I don't know if we can go – if it's up there, Pete, if people can go back and see the TikTok live that we did very, very briefly on
Davros. There is a short. We clipped out something from that TikTok live. So you can see a chunk of it on our TikTok channel. Yeah.
Okay, so go check that out. And while you're checking it out, check out the comic book Star Beast review that we did. And I got to say, there was less of the comic book than I expected in this.
Yeah, it's true. So the Roth, there's not really any surgery on the Doctor, and there's no bomb implanted in him. And
he doesn't need to go get lead from a roof to stop himself from blowing up. Fudge is in it. I'm so glad
he's in it, but he's just window dressing. He doesn't really do much. And, how could you, right? I mean, this is, again, ultimately, it's got to be the Tennant Tate show. And you've got to selectively take out stuff that is just kind of extraneous to that while still telling something that is passively the Star Beast. So it's too bad. Yeah. Hopefully Fudge gets a future trip somewhere, maybe with Shooty or something like that. I mean, he's pretty young. I'm sure we could get back to wherever he is.
I'm sure Fudge is going to get pulled into Rose's Beanie Baby business, which is clearly going to take off. There was some well-made Beanie Babies there.
I loved all that. Like, that was really cool with the Dalek, and the Ood one was really good.
See them in the background, right? So it's sort of a little hint. I like that, RTD, he doesn't just pull rabbits out of hats and you're like, wait a minute, where did that come from? You can be like, oh, that was an Ood. Oh, I saw that in the background. And that, like, it rewards a second viewing to catch
it. Yeah, it's hiding in plain sight because you're mm-hmm. completely, all your eyes are going right to the meep. And that's all you're thinking about. Like, there it is. And you kind of almost doesn't matter what you're surrounding them with. It's almost like those videos where it's like, okay, keep an eye on the person holding the plate, and then they have people in rhino costumes and whatever else walking through, and you don't even notice. So it's
I was just reading a book called "You Are What You Watch." Highly recommended. It talks about how a skilled director will draw your center of attention, which is a really tiny part of your eye, when it comes down to it, to a particular point on the screen. And yes, on a first viewing, our attention was actually drawn. You're absolutely drawn to the Meep's eyes hiding in that pile of toys. Mm. And on second viewings, we're going to go back and pick out every single toy that the Meep was hiding behind, right? I have no idea what they were.
So how did you like the new super-powered sonic screwdriver?
Wow, yes. It is amazing what the Sonic can do with Disney money. Mm-hmm. it can build concrete walls, which I believe is a it's a reference, right? Force fields, well, but like there was a reference, something he was talking about with Rose, I believe, about as in the first Rose.
Yeah, well, that's in the Dr. Danzas when he says, "I'm trying to resonate concrete with the sonic screwdriver," which he did with some difficulty in that episode. It wasn't like you think he did easily. I guess he's perfected it. But the big things were, okay, now he can basically create his own little hologram LED screen right pretty in front neat. Of him.
Yeah.
And not only that.
Monitors for the doctor.
Well, and then he takes that to the next level by creating like full on plexiglass force fields that he could like push into position. And by the way, the doctor is pretty damn good at drawing a right angle. I'll just say that right now.
Maybe there may be a little AI correction going on.
I think you're right. He's got some of that Microsoft Surface Studio technology in there. So he pushes those into position, and they're like force fields. He can do that, which is like, I like the monitor. I think that's pretty cool. And it makes a little more sense even than those olden days of like, he looks at the sonic and he just sort of understands what it's telling him. I think you had to sort of headcanon it like, oh, you must be really attuned to the noises it's making. Or maybe there's a telepathic circuit or something. I like that he can actually create a screen for it. So that makes sense. But the force field stuff was probably a step too far for me. It was just a little bit like, okay, I'm going with it for the scene. And it's kind of like I'm into it. But it is like,
Before? I love it when we have different opinions on things. Yes, I immediately made note of the fact that, oh, the Sonic can do this now. How come we haven't seen that before? But, you know, this is a show where the TARDIS just changes itself conveniently with every Doctor or showrunner, so just go with it. But it actually did choke me up a little bit that it's, you know, we're talking on a day where there's a ceasefire, albeit brief one, in the Middle East, you know, and the Doctor is the hero that is returning to our screens and on Disney screens for the first time. And here he is, and his role in this is not to be the one holding the gun on either side, but to push the force field between the two warring factions. And that just seems so Doctor-ish, and so what is different about this hero, right? He doesn't carry a gun. You know, if you're watching this for the first time, and it might be time to get to our newbie review, then that's just a great thing to see, isn't it? And in a world that is so riven by violence, the Doctor can literally just put walls between the violence. And
yeah, no, you're
the
right.
Hero we need.
In other words, I'll give it a pass. I was really into it in the moment, and the fan in me is all just like, wait a minute, that's a little too much for the Sonic. But you're dead on that it is a perfect Doctor moment. And then he does the resonating concrete. He goes five doors down and he checks the pulse of the guy, which again, also very doctory. And then speaking of being the mediator, he's the one who's like, whoa, 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 wait a minute. Like we were just shot at by all those guys and there's not a mark on the car. And he brings everyone in there and he's conveniently, again, it's sort of hand wavy. Oh, I'll just interfere with some teleport to bring them here instantly.
He invokes the Shadow Proclamation. And
we're back at RTD. It's happening.
Yep, exactly. And he pulls out a barrister's wig, which is just so Doctor-ish. He just happens to have one in his pocket, goes straight into it. I'm loving the 14th Doctor. I'm loving the ways in which he is subtly different from the 10th. I love that he was told not to wear a suit that skinny at over the age of 35.
I love that he actually said he loves Donna. He was very open with his emotions. He was just, whoa, do I say stuff like that now?
Yes.
And you know what, Doctor Who, the 10th did not say he loved Rose.
Yeah. Even though, and you know what Doctor Who is now doing for the first time is actually the spouse asking the other spouse, is this okay if I step on board the TARDIS? I'm not sure that's happened before. You know, directly addressing the question of, I'm getting into this strange box with a strange man. What do you think about that? You know?
really, right?
Rory never got asked, you know? Mickey Smith never got asked. So, I feel like this is a more mature way to handle going off with the Doctor. And what did you think, by the way, of spilling coffee over the console as a way to get us to the next place?
I mean, it was a little on the nose, but I'll take it. By the way, the new TARDIS interior is fabulous. I love the inside. It's really cool. It's super
clean.
The
disco TARDIS. The disco Disney TARDIS.
It's also very reminiscent of Tenet's TARDIS. It's like basically my daughter Grace was like, oh, they just cleaned it up.
Cleaned it up and they bigged it up. Yes.
Yeah.
All right. Go ahead.
You can see the influence from like the Fifth Doctor era and, you know, the really clean computery TARDIS. It's very, that's the thing. The big thing that's different is the console. It's hexagonal. It's got like lot of old school. Well, it's old school in the sense of like 80s Doctor Who influence there, right?
It's the color of Hartnell's, isn't it? It's like color of Hartnell Troughton TARDIS.
It is. I mean, the colors are there, but I mean, just the shape of it and I don't know. It felt like the energy I got was Five Doctors type energy, where it's all just like this new console and it's shiny and they're all kind of proud of it. And he gets so, I love that, that Tennant gets so excited. He's just like running all over the place. Like that is really doctorish. That
they
energy.
Really gave him some running space in this new place. Oh my goodness. Matt Smith is going to have to come back now and be the 16th Doctor just so that he can out kinetic David Tennant in a TARDIS that big. I got to say, it was nice, before we get to the newbie review, which is where I think we should go next, it was nice to see the Chibnall era, which I, of course, have my problems with, not just completely wiped out, right? The fact that the Doctor was just a woman was referenced several times. Mm-hmm. I love him telling the psychic paper to catch up. And I love the fact that Jodie got biscuits in her TARDIS. She got custard creams. The 14th Doctor gets coffee to go with those biscuits. But you never get both at the same time, which seems very TARDIS-y.
Yeah, absolutely. And the coffee on the console, I mean, go for it. It's kind of silly you have a console that gives you coffee and then blows up the moment a drop of coffee spilled on it.
We're going to find out that that's toy maker, shenanigans going on there.
I think you're right. And it's funny that they gave you, I wonder if it's a big tease, though, that it's this beautiful, clean TARDIS, and now it's blown up and they got to do it again. Is there going to be like yet another TARDIS interior in the next episode of Shurigawa?
We have said before on Pull to Open, if you check out the Best Regeneration Episodes podcast, I believe it is, where we talked about how David Tennant is the most destructive Doctor in terms of blowing up his TARDIS. Yep. And when he was Jodie, she was very good about stepping outside the TARDIS for her regeneration energy, you know, which is kind of a good idea.
I always thought it's kind of a little weird to regenerate standing up on a cliff. That feels a little risky to me, but
Doctor, kind of a thrill seeker. All right, let's get to it. Let's get to the newbie review. You mentioned Grace. What did she think?
Oh, Grace really liked it. Pretty much everyone liked it. I think Jack had not as high an opinion on it. He was sort of probably influenced a little bit by sort of some of the stuff that sort of hit you over the head. In particular, maybe the comment about a person who is male presenting could never figure this out, which was like, that's sort of a jab to fire there on sort of the points that he's trying to make. The grandparents both really liked it. They were super into it. They thought it was nice and thrilling and just looked great. So, yeah.
Yeah, got to say, the action scenes, I mean, no one's ever done that to London before, you know, even though, again, bit RTD-ish to have vast crevices open up in the earth and just heal up because why? Can you answer that? I can't. I've no idea why that got
There's
reversed.
No timey-wiminess. It's a dagger drive. So presumably, whatever the dagger drive is doing isn't just pure destruction. It's somehow doing some kind of energy siphoning or something. I don't know. There's got to be there's got to be some kind of energy put in or put back that fully reverses it. But yeah, that was also pretty hand wavy. I'll give you that. I mean, you can headcanon the technology however you want, but the hand waviness gets going really fast and furious toward the end. Like, again, I'll buy that. Oh, Donna's been split up. If her meta crisis has been split up, that's fine. I'm also glad they didn't, like, because for a minute there, I was thinking, oh, are all the specials going to be meta crisis Donna? Is it going to be Dr. Donna? As interesting as that sounds, it's also like, well, we want to see the Doctor and Donna. You know, that's what we want love them just in season hit 4.
Yeah, it's interesting because here we have two examples of, RTD standing for, retcon the decision or reset the device, reset the destruction, certainly, with London. So that was kind of a bad RTD way of doing it. But yeah, I think you're right. You need to get the meta crisis out of the way. You need to do everything you can to make it feel a satisfying ending.
Yeah, so maybe, I don't know. I would have liked to see it written a little bit different and resolved the same, which is to say, I don't like the hand waviness of we're just going to wish this away and it goes away. There's basically a little too much of that throughout because Tennant, teleports the folks in. They get rid of the meta crisis thing. There's just a few too many bits where it's just, oh, we're just going to do some Doctor Who magic and hope people don't notice. And again, for some of it, it works. And for some of it, the point they're making is worth it. Like you said, with the force fields. But when you get too much of it, it, kind of just starts to feel a little like he's playing that get out of jail free card too many times in a row.
So what do you think for people who just tuning in for the first time, is this their Rose? Is this the sort of the new Doctor Who? Because we talked about, the next season is season 1. We are deliberately starting afresh with Shooty. But this is a good point to jump in, yeah?
Oh, absolutely. I think it's got all the right elements of Doctor Who. It's got a Doctor. It's got the companion, Tennant and Tate. Like, again, you have the stuff that's set up really well with the catch-up at the beginning. So Tennant sort of talking directly to camera, which bothered Jack for some reason. It didn't bother me at all. I think you'd kind of need to do it because – Doctor Who is just so hard to write for in this sense, because this is like a sort of fan service because it's bringing back all this stuff, but it is also supposed to be a jumping off point, particularly for people on Disney Plus. So I think he really threaded a needle here with the story he weaved.
It's sort of like that opening segment sort of felt a bit like that's the better way to do the Amy Pond opening that they stuck on the American version of season 5,
Right.
The Doctor, he blah blah blah, and we've been running ever since, which never really made sense to me. And you have to watch it over and over again. We watched it on HBO Max in that season. But if you're going to talk to camera, just talk to camera. Just break the fourth wall. Just get into it. We've obviously got to catch people up, and having that sort of very theatrical way of doing it, of switching between, the Doctor and Donna. You could imagine a stage play. You could do that in a stage play setting, right? Without all the expensive Disney backgrounds. You just have a spotlight on one and a spotlight on the other. It felt very stagey. It's RTD as playwright, right? So it's a little artificial, but it totally works, especially for the newbies.
Yeah, and so you also get that sort of new TARDIS at the end. You get this sort of new relationship with them and that he's getting to know her again and her family. So, and that's all. They do all this sort of shorthand stuff and quick stuff with Wilf. I think for people just tuning in, you get so much. There's such an economy of script here. And by the end, you feel like you're kind of at the same sort of pace as everyone else because, we've all just seen the new TARDIS. We've all just sort of kind of caught up. So, you're fine and you're ready for the next one.
Absolutely. And also, the Meep was practically guaranteed to return.
Yeah, and after he reports to the boss. The boss visits him in prison.
That's almost guaranteed to be a scene, isn't it? In the Wild Blue Yonder, you can almost see it, Meep talking to someone. We turn around, camera turns around, it's Neil Patrick Harris. It writes itself.
Yeah, I mean, who else could he mean, right? I mean, I assume these are going to be pretty tightly tied 3 episodes. So I'm sure he's talking about the Toymaker, but we'll see. Meep is talking about the Toymaker, I should say.
there we go.
We'll see.
The The Meep, yes. The Meep was talking about the toy maker, none of whom's identities are pretty clear at this moment. But yes, absolutely.
So ordinarily, on a regular episode of Pull to Open, we'd be cutting to some important questions. Yeah. But since this is a very not-so-normal episode of Pull to Open, we'll do a little bit of housekeeping and say, hey, follow us on social at Pull to Open 63 or Pull to Open, especially on TikTok, where we're Pull to Open, and on YouTube, where we're at youtube.com/pull to open, where you can see things like my great Starbies poster here in the background. Also, nice. You can check us out online at pulltoopen.net, where you can subscribe to a newsletter where you get full notes. Although there are no notes for this one, so you're probably not going to get notes for this episode, but every all the planned ones we do, we will definitely send notes to you if you subscribe there.
Indeed. And by the way, I'm just going to give a plug to two of our old podcasts in particular. The one that has just gone up, we just happened to have been sent by the randomizer to the Three Doctors, which was the 10th anniversary. We've also done Day of the Doctor, which is the 50th anniversary. So really 50 plus 10, we kind of did 60 before it was cool. But go check those out. If you just haven't had enough anniversariness in your life, please go check those out. Follow us on all the socials and come visit us next week, next time, where in a very, very timey-wimey way, we will be going back to the future and visiting Eden, where there will be a nightmare. That is our next random adventure once we've... the TARDIS here didn't like that. The lights are going out, so it may be... Maybe time to wish you farewell from Costa Rica. And I will be back for next time, next Instacom.
Hold on, hold on. We gotta give. We can't let people hang. And how are we gonna rate this? Do we rate this episode?
Are we gonna rate this? Well, that is a good question. I mean, we could give it a preliminary rating, right? But I think the randomizer would be very mad with us if we gave it a perma rating. Because the randomizer has yet to officially take us to the Starbies.
Well, should we do a completely different scale then? And just rank it by the number of TARDISes out of 5.
Ooh, I'm going to give that 6.
6?
Yeah.
Wow,
I found an extra TARDIS. I found a broken old Type 40, which I'm just going to bash on to the end of the 5th one.
All right, well, I'm going to be bold. Maybe this is bold, maybe not. But I'm only going to give it 4 out of 5.
Oh, fantastic. We average at 5.
Yeah, so we average at 5. So it works.
No, but go ahead. There's just
too much hand waviness for me to really go for it. Like, I really think that the hand waving of the meta crisis just kind of being wished away when that was such a core and, you know, part of the end of series 4. I don't think you're allowed to do that, to just kind of like, oh, you know, we could have wished it away the whole time, which is sort of the implication. I think I would really wanted him to earn that back in some way. And I would have been fairly generous about doing it. I'm just not going to let you just whatever. Like we're going to hold hands and it just goes away and everybody's fine. I'm heartless for that, but it is something I didn't like.
Let me introduce you to a Mr. The Davies, first name Russell. His pronoun is also the, by the way. It's in the middle of his name. This is just this welcome back. Like, we may have some more RTD in the future of the randomizer, not to spoil anything there. You know, we're going to see how this sort of thing happens a lot, and it happens in every sort of big ending of the RTD era, right? It just comes to the
track. But I'm saying there's things you can hand wave away and there's things you shouldn't. And this is, in my view, this is one of the things you shouldn't. Every story and every showrunner sort of has to hand. I mean, it's Doctor Who. You're going to have to like gloss over things and sort of to get to the things you want to do. I just felt like this being such a cornerstone of what we knew to be the rules of the Doctor and Donna and everything they went through. You can't just, you know, discard that because it's convenient. I wanted him to earn that back, and he didn't really.
I felt the earning, which I think is the difference between our ratings. So interesting. Always love debating it with you, though, and love to share our thoughts with you guys. Yeah, and I'm glad we were able to do this. Looking forward to doing it again for the Wild Blue Yonder.
All right, folks, this has been Pull to Open Hot Take. We're going to be back on course or off course with our randomizer, as Chris said, next week. But then we'll also have yet another take. More hotness, more takes, more than you know what to do with. They're going to be so hot, you're going to have to spill them all over the TARDIS console in front of you, these takes.
That's right. The TARDIS. We are officially not allowed on the TARDIS's insurance policy because, or indeed UNIT's insurance policy, now we know they have one, because our takes are too hot. They might just combust. So keep it right here at Pull to Open for Wild Blue Yonder and whatever is going on that ship. It looks very intriguing. We're on board for the journey. We'll be taking a diversion to back to our random journey. And we will see you guys next time.
All right. Take care, folks.